Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Man, Videodrome just makes me think about the fact, like, hey, I have a righteous anger towards American politicians, and like certainly solving your problem with violence doesn't feel good to me, just generally speaking. But I wouldn't be opposed for somebody taking one of the Videodrome weapons and like shooting a tooth into and making him turn into gross sludge before disappearing from this world forever. That would be okay. So like if someone has a Videodrome gun and they want to like target with it, that's not an assassination. We're just turning him to gross soup.
Make it clear. Make it clear.
Casey, are you getting all of this?
I would be okay with it. I wouldn't be opposed to it is what I'm saying. I'm not calling for it. I'm just saying you could.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure somebody out there knows how to encode a YouTube video with kind of you know, that kind of video encoding. It's very special. Mm-hmm. Only a few people can do it.
Videodrome encoding, yes. Gable passed out. And I think very shortly after they passed out, they were discovered. And I think Nodos heads immediately to Travis. Travis.
Yeah.
Gable has collapsed.
Okay, well, I feel like I would have felt that. They're so big, would have probably shaken the ship.
Yes, well, the bigness is part of the reason that I have come to you. I need someone to help me move them to the medical examination office.
Oh, well, what about Slam here? He's so large.
Gable, first of all, Slam is deeply entangled with those ropes. It would take us hours of deep and difficult work to untangle him from that. He may be there for the remainder of this adventure in port.
Like a strung ham, good God.
It's okay, it's meditative.
Fine. If the ham is stuck, then I suppose I will help.
Quickly. Nodos, like, moves between most ships, like old sailing ships, used to have their cargo holds loaded from the top. So I imagine that the Uhuru has, like, similar points of access at the front and the back of the ship. Nodos, like, slides down one of the ladders and, of course, cuts through the kitchen on his way. He just lays a hand on Jonnet's, like, shoulder and collar and, like, pulls him with their group. Come, you must assist.
Knife there.
Yeah, I think you toss the knife and like Jane just catches it out of the air.
Yeah, there's like one last flash of the eyes. Like he throws it, knife. Jane doesn't even look. Like
I'll be honest, absolutely horrible kitchen etiquette from every single one of you. This is extremely dangerous.
Jane, Toku, and Fella Ferretti all flip you off.
Yeah.
As you get pulled
in unison, they never turn around. It's all backs and then birds.
I bet you just
backs and birds, baby.
You just toss knives into a full sink of water and leave it. And I bet
It's got blue liquid in it. It's the blue stuff. It disinfects.
No, but I'm saying that's extremely dangerous. You reach your hand into it. You can't see what's in there. You cut up your hand on a knife.
The liquid is fairly clear. All right? It's pretty clear.
Mm-mm. We would have so many more fingers on this ship if you just practiced a little bit of safety.
You know what? Why are you still in the kitchen?
Yeah, he's like leaning his head around the corner, being pulled by Notos into another room.
I'm just trying to help. And speaking of help...
Toku throws a root vegetable at you.
Excuse me. Again, bad kitchen etiquette. And if you need help, I would say you should help your friend Slam.
You don't even have anything to say. Just leave. You're finding the words.
Slam is stuck as a ham in the front of the ship. Maybe use one of your dangerous knives that you love to toss around to cut him out.
I think at the last word there, notice his fingers like extend over Travis's mouth and pull him into the next room. Finally ending that scene, we turn the corner and we can see Gable laid out on the ground. We can see that like there is a like secret shelf that Gable has like in the boards of the ship where they've tucked away what looks like a pile of rocks. And on the ground, we can see like marked into the floor, either with chalk or charcoal, the remnants of some kind of ritual have been done. And Gable is just passed out on the ground.
Gable?
As far as I'm aware, you both understand their condition.
Passed out?
No. Travis, come on. Their origin.
Oh.
Yeah. How does that equal this?
I don't know.
Did you just come in here and see them like this? Were you here when this happened?
How long have they been here?
Gable left the helm to attend to something before port. I happened to see them leave the helm, and curiosity drew me to their path. I didn't watch them as they worked, but I did hear them collapse. Has this happened before, as far as you know?
No.
I don't think so. Jonnet goes up to Gable just to do the most surface level check. All right, they're still breathing. They don't seem... Does Gable seem like, outside of not being conscious, is anything else amiss? Wrong?
Not that you can tell physically.
Okay.
Through any examination that you'd be able to do with your hands or eyes, Gable appears as Gable normally is. We've established that Gable doesn't have blood, but also I think there is still a heartbeat. Even if that is weird, like there is some sort of pulse or heartbeat about their being. And of course, you know, they are warm to the touch. So you are, and Gable also breathes. We do know that Gable breathes. So there's no difference there. As far as you can tell with like a mundane check, they are alive.
Okay. And is there anything around Gable to give any kind of clue of what they were doing?
You do see a rock that appears to be like the center of the ritual. Like there are a lot of rocks that are like tucked away in this cubby hole, but like one of them was pulled out to do some sort of something. That is hard to see. I will say that the way we'll call it both chalk and charcoal, the way the things that they have done as part of the ritual have fallen, you can see smudges at their shoulders behind them. It does make it look like there are wings spread out on the ground.
Jonnet is going to go to the rock and just going to very tepidly put a hand down and touch it and see if there's any kind of read or vibe from it.
You get a vibe. This is... I don't think you... I don't want to give it, like, good or bad value judgment, but this does not feel like a normal rock. There's, like, a different hum to it, almost. Like, we know the idea of the om, the idea that creation made a sound, and that sound echoes throughout the universe, and it is possible to, like, resonate with it. Like, there is something that is a fraction of that resonance. Almost a trumpeting of creation exists within this rock.
That's heavy. That's... Travis?
Yeah?
Feel this rock.
Okay. Do I get a vibe?
You know what? I think the vibe that you get is strange. In that this rock almost feels stiller than other rocks for you, if that makes sense. Where Jonnet feels a resonant vibe coming from this rock, you feel almost like this rock is intentionally giving you a cold shoulder.
Feels like an anti-rock.
See, that's wild, because this feels like such a rock to me that, like, I thought I knew rocks until I met this rock, and now I have to reevaluate what everything else that I experienced was.
Now, touch it again. Do you think because you touched it first, you sucked all the rock out of the rock?
Okay, all right. John is going to touch the rock again. This time it's less tepid. It's like whole hand on rock.
Yeah, it still resonates in the same way. And as you do it, Nodos goes, "Gentlemen, please."
Nodos, come over here and touch this rock.
Touch this rock.
It's a rock.
You don't,
it's a rock.
No.
You
this
don't understand.
This is the rock, okay?
No, this is not this, a rock at all. This is the absence of rock.
This is like four rocks in one rock.
Mr. Gable is passed out on the ground. We have to get them to the medical
okay.
room.
Okay, we go through dangerous situations all the time. We have yet to meet a super rock.
Or...
take
a nega
rock. Take the rock.
If I put this rock in my pocket will get lighter.
I fucking can't.
See, if I'm thinking, if I put this rock in my pocket, I don't think I'll be able to, like, leave the ground. This sink will ship. This ship will sink.
Now, but if I put it in my pocket, this sink will ship.
I cannot possibly lift Gable on my own. Travis, I need you to get on the other side. Jonnet, I need you to help. We must take them to the captain.
Okay, but grab the rock. Grab the rock and we'll help you.
All right, I'm going to grab the rock. Jonnet grabs the rock. He doesn't have any pockets at the ready, so he puts it in his mouth, and then he grabs Gable.
He doesn't have any pockets at the ready.
You know what? He's in PJs today.
I love the idea of... I guess PJs is good. I just love the idea of Jonnet just having too much in his pockets. Like,
yeah.
They're jam-packed. They cannot fit a single extra
Jonnet definitely wears cargo shorts for sure.
which is why he's kicking himself right now. Because under any other situation, it's a laundry day. And under any other situation, he would have ample pocket space.
Jonnet,
we've
got to
sew some cargo pockets on those PJs.
Yes.
Jonnet picking up the rock and says out loud, "My inventory is full," and just puts it in their mouth.
If you trade to me four silver spoons, I could expand your inventory slots.
Nah, dog. All right. And for the last time, you don't work on the ship, okay?
I was hired. I was one of the few people who was hired.
That's right.
I could offer you this briefcase that allows you to slot things into it in squares. You could fit a rocket launcher and some pistol ammunition.
No, we're not doing that, all right? We're not buying, we're not selling. We're taking Gable to the captain.
Thank you.
We cut over to the door outside the captain's office, where you are so close to Dreff's, what used to be Dreff's office, the medical examination room. But we can see that the whole group of you is covered in sweat, exhausted from dragging Gable from the bottom of the ship, essentially, to the top of the ship. Gable being 7 feet tall, made of a tower of muscle, they're extremely heavy. Nathan, I think at this time, like, you've probably, like, the ship is drawn into port and now they're going through, like, the regular docking checks, which means you've probably wrapped up your lesson to the orphans. How do you happen upon this group?
So Orimar is walking back from the class, quite pleased with themselves. They've only relatively recently been putting in the effort into moving their face muscles to express emotion by being a ghost haunting their own body. Finer motor movements like that are often inefficient or annoying to do. Now that he's trying to take an active role in being the charismatic leader that he's supposed to be, he's like, maybe I should actually emote more. That might make me more endearing to my colleagues. And so has an expression of, like, I think contentment as they are eating an apple on the way back. We see a slow kind of like bite of an apple and what sounds almost like a mill grinder sound as they don't really chew it. Just kind of grind this thing into a mush as they are walking down the corridor looking content and then run into the crew.
I'm so curious about that apple, and we'll learn more about that later.
Oh, is obtaining apple a bit like a...
No, I'm just, where does it go?
Yeah.
What do you do with it?
That's... Oh, it'll come up. That'll come up.
Okay.
Don't need to worry about that.
I'm glad that that seed is being sown. Mm. But yeah, you happen upon this scene of three people dragging one gigantic person towards the medical room.
There is a, like, everybody hears the boots of Orimar Vale. I think you always hear him before you see him, which then slow, as he kind of like runs into all of you, is about to kind of like sign in greeting, realizes that his hand is full with the apple, just puts the entire thing in his mouth and shuts his drawer again. The grinding continues.
We need more pockets on this ship.
All around.
He then processes that you're all carrying a body that is Gable and you are all looking very stressed and rapidly composes himself. He was very relaxed before and then he's having to switch on being a leader, almost like a light switch. You see his even like body change, like body posture change.
It is, I think, a little bit like the transformation sequence that you see for like a Megazord in a Sentai show. In that, like, slowly, because you have to one by one switch posture from relaxed posture to alert posture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we get this like sequence of you slowly activating different muscles and whatnot in your body to do that.
And signing with both hands, being kind of like, what happens to be the trouble here?
You gotta touch this rock.
Here. Oh, wait. Here.
Orimar starts signing. I know Gable is built very solidly, but... And then when Jonet produces a rock from his mouth, the sentence kind of like, yeah, I guess as the rock kind of falls like out of your mouth, covered in saliva, just a zombie hand extends out of shot to kind of catch the rock midair.
All right, you are one of the few people that I have no idea if this rock would feel significant or not, Nathan. So let's roll a perception check.
Oh, sick. Hell yeah.
Let's make this average.
Yeah. Unfortunately, while I do have my character sheet, the PDF is not open. Let me do that. Uh-huh. Sorry to be unprofessional live on air.
Good.
Perception check.
To find my dice.
An average, so two purple. Got it. We do actually very, very good. It is 4 successes and 4 threats.
Interesting. I think that you have to activate the nerve pathways of Orimar's body in order to do this. Like, I think you have to actively switch it on. So I am going to require one strain from Travis as you pull life energy from Travis to like reawaken nerves in your arm. And receiving data from nerves feels extremely weird. Like, I think there's a pins and needles sensation in your arm at first as you're like reactivating nerves to try and assess something through feeling. And what you learn quite quickly after that sensation wears down a little bit is that to your physical body, this just feels like a rock and there's nothing significant. But with the living connection between those nerve pathways and the spirit that is now haunting your body, you can address this rock as a spiritual presence. And in it, like, you can see the bending gold and silver of something that exists spiritually as a physical object. It is a strange and fascinating thing that reminds you of one other thing that you have seen and held before in your life. The other thing that sits now in a strange spiritual pocket that you know you own and possess, but can only hold it through careful concentration and will. The crown of the sovereign.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
I think a within the soul of Orimar Vale, we get the shadow outline of the body as the glowing soul inside processes this information. We get the full like equations moving around as Orimar is rapidly thinking of how to actually respond to this information, because I don't think he wants to actually explain what this thing is, especially with what it's so similar to. And instead signs with one hand, because the other one is containing the rock, says, "This is indeed a rock."
Bad answer. Bad answer.
But it's not just a... I feel like I'm... Am I crazy?
No. Well, one of us here is right.
One of us is wrong. Is losing it.
One of the three of us...
Like, he puts a hand up and being kind of in a kind of like, stop arguing for a second. "I will do you a favor." Yeah, with deeper voice, even though we're signing, this is still Orimar's voice. "I will do you a favor. I will hold on to this rock for further study so we can tell you and determine who is correct about the rock."
Thank you.
Fair. Thank you.
Captain, if you would please. Mr. Gable has passed out during some kind of ritual, origin unknown, though I suspect it might be celestial.
There is a hand on chin, and you see micro expressions as the brow like furrows by a good 30-40%. Orimar is proud with the level of actual detail and consternation that he's giving you.
Wow.
"I see. Well, we may have a book on this matter." And he opens the door to his office and like goes over to the bookshelf and signing with one hand. "Please detail what you saw in terms of any ritual items or drawings," as he wants to go and see if there's anything in his own records to kind of explain what Gable was getting up to.
I think Nodos begins to like launch into an explanation, certainly looking over your shoulder as you flip mm-hmm. through the various like ritual markings inside the book. I would like to cut over to Teacher Wei. Wei, now knowing that Jonnet is like landed, I kind of want to know what preparations Wei is making.
What preparations Wei is making?
Yeah, you had mentioned wanting to do some kind of ritual yeah. with Jonnet, mm-hmm. and we can leave that to be a surprise.
Yeah.
But I imagine that you have to prepare something in order to do that. So I just kind of want to know, like, what's the craft that goes into doing something like that? Do you have to boil stuff? Mm. Do you have to, like, grind stuff? What's going on?
Yeah, I think it's grinding. And I think it's also making the ground material into, you know, solid little forms, kind of like Play-Doh, I guess.
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And so there's like a bowl, there's like a grinder, and then eventually basically just ends up in these little like pellets, I guess. Pellets that are for consumption.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Cool. 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 So I want to know, like, what does it look like you're putting plant matter into it? Does it look like?
Yeah, it's kind of, I think that they got this like naturally, sort of like a mushroom like or fungi like formations that you can find in this area. It's just like naturally occurring along the edge of, you know, where the water meets the land, and they've been picking mm-hmm. that stuff by hand. So there's just this pile of like fungi material sitting next to them. It has to be grinded first and then made into pellets. So on the right is the raw material, on the left mm-hmm. is the completed material.
There is this kind of beautiful process mm-hmm. of like taking this and like I kind of feel like it changes color yeah. a few times mm-hmm. as it moves through forms
yeah.
and probably part of it, especially because like the final form is these pellets that you actually have to like draw water out of it.
Mm, right.
So we get to see a little bit of how that works.
Yeah. Yeah. So they use the water bending to basically like desiccate the water from the fungi. Oh, that makes sense. So they desiccate the fungi first, and then they put it in the bowl. Then it's like boom, 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 boom. And then once it's all like mashed up, then you need to add a little bit of water into it so that it gets, you know, there's some sort of binder that allows this ground stuff to stay together in pellets. And then you kind of have to like shape it by hand. So obviously at this point they've cleaned their hands because you don't want to contaminate it. And they're like shaping the kind of ground mixture with a little bit of like water into little pellets.
I like the idea that it's not possible. Like if a human being touches it throughout any part of the process, that it won't work. But because you have the magic of the liquid swords, like there is a thin layer of water that separates your fingers from the actual like pellet that you're manipulating.
Yeah.
So it's this like very intricate thing that can really only be done by someone who has skills like yours.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good kitchen practice. Wearing gloves is a good
thing. Oh, water gloves. Yeah, yeah. That's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We reach like the end of this process where the scant few stars in the sky have finally come alight, where the waning moon that is approaching a crescent but has not quite made a crescent yet is now visible over the water. And you can see off into the distance around the Mangroneels, there is a light. Like a ghostly light that I think glows like a bit of pink. There's a bit of like teal luminescence like coming out of those trees. I am going to make a roll for you, as I know you don't have the wacky dice that we use on this show.
For sure, for sure. Yeah,
because I want to see how much Wayne knows about the phenomenon that they're witnessing here.
Mm.
And I did get an extremely good roll for you.
Wow.
So you got one success and five advantages here.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Dope. So you are going to know that what you are seeing right now is something that the locals call the Chasseur Sumat. It is a, Samart. I'm not going to be able to pronounce that because it's French.
Wait, what was it again?
Do you mind if you spell it?
Yeah, I will. I'm going to drop it in the chat.
Ah, okay.
And that will be how I'll allow everybody to friggin' try their hand at that.
Ah, Chasseur Sumat.
Okay, Lex.
There we go. Lex has got the skills.
Do you speak French?
Yeah, I do. Not super fluently, but I know how to pronounce anything that's written, and I can read it. Yeah.
Nous pouvons parler.
Okay.
Et tous les autres ne peuvent comprendre.
I love that everybody gets to show off here, and I get to show off what a dum-dum I am.
Yeah, I will remain silent.
That's the only thing that is even remotely show-offable that I can do.
So, yeah, this is like kind of a cryptid equivalent of the area. You know that it's supposed to haunt around the Mangrenil, especially in the swamp, and that it is one of the many reasons that people tend not to frequent this area. It is supposed to manifest itself as light in the darkness, and if it catches you, it will drain you of your blood. However, you got a ton of advantages. So we know that whatever you're doing and wherever you are sort of like respecting the ways that you need to be safe from this creature. So I'm curious, what has Teacher Wei done? What is Teacher Wei doing that will not arouse the ire of the Chasseur?
So just to clarify, this is a living being? A creature or a spirit?
That is what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be like the argument of, oh, it's a living thing. Oh, it is a spirit. It sort of like moves back and forth between stories. And I think because you only got one success, that's not something that was important to you. It's like, oh, it doesn't matter whether it's physically here or whether it's a spiritual thing. No matter what, if it's real, I need to know the things that will, you know, keep me safe or respect its space.
Ah, I see. I think that the thing that makes most sense since we established that I can wear water gloves is that I just have like a protective water shield like all over my body at this point. Like a thin layer, you know, barely noticeable to untrained eyes. But, you know, the fact that I am shielded by water basically allows me to kind of blend into the surroundings so that I don't really like stand out as like organic material, if that makes sense, or like a spiritual material. So like now I'm kind of like, it's like water camouflage.
I love this. I love this for so many reasons, because if it is a physical being, if it is an animal, like you having a thin layer of water around you means that like your scent is not entering the area.
Right.
It is merely catching on the water and not being distributed. And if it is a spiritual being, like you have almost like Arnold Schwarzenegger in The Predator, covering yourself in mud to lower your body temperature. It's like whatever spiritual signal a human soul gives off is being covered by the water, so you would appear duller and more like water to a spiritual being, which I think is friggin' rad.
And human beings are a large part water, so by, you know, covering myself with another layer of water, then now it feels like there's nothing out of the ordinary.
Yes. So you see this phenomenon that people believe is this being off in the distance, and so that we can learn more about Wei. Wei, you know, when you had mentioned, I think earlier, when you got your takeout that this is where you were headed, people probably offered their warnings. Local told you like, oh, the Chasseur haunts that area. Like, you probably shouldn't go there, you out-of-towner. And now that you've seen something that is like it, like, what are you compelled to do anything? How do you react?
I think I really want to take, like, a mental snapshot because of my third eye abilities. I have this ability to basically have a photographic memory and store it in my pocket space. And I think that that's what I want to do. I'm not really afraid because I feel like I have sufficient protection, but I really want to preserve this as an experience in my memory, because something that's really important to Wei is, you know, having as many experiences in the world as possible. And so this is kind of like a local experience that they like finally get to have. So like they're reacting to it not in fear, but in fascination and in a form of like, this is another thing that I can check off my my bucket list.
I love this so much. And I really like the idea of Wei entering like almost a waking meditation. Mm-hmm. The idea that like taking a mental snapshot is not simply remembering something very hard. It is like investing yourself bodily and spiritually into the experience of seeing it in some way. And I think like entering this like waking meditative state, I would love for your eye to open up and for you to describe to us what it looks like.
So when it's closed, I imagine that it's just sort of a gray outline, like a gray outline that you can very clearly see that it's an eye. But, think of, I don't know, a way that, you know, think of like an Egyptian eye, like the way that it's drawn, where it kind of, you know, looks a little bit like an omni symbol. So I imagine that that's what it looks like when it's closed. But when it's open, I like to think that it has a very vivid cyan color that is that contrasts with everything else that I'm wearing.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah. And maybe it doesn't emanate a light so much, but like even in the darkness, it looks as if it is lit. So,
right.
You know, if you were to hold your hand in front of it, it's not like you would see light coming off of it, but like it can still be very clearly seen in the darkness.
Right, right.
Yeah. And so, you know, we see Wei kind of absorbing this moment and absorbing this experience as we cut back to Orimar, Nodos, Jonnet, and Travis. I kind of feel like everybody is sort of crammed into the now cramped medical examination room. Nodos and the captain are probably huddled over this book that the captain has of like rituals and whatnot, as like they are trying to pattern match to the things that Nodos saw. I want to know what are Jonnet and Travis doing?
So Travis has been here before to this city.
Yeah, definitely.
Is he aware of any, like, not a doctor, but, you know, like a spiritual doctor, or, you know, like a whoever would be able to help with this? You know what I mean? Like a
metaphysician.
Yes, yes.
Absolutely. You definitely know of someone, like someone that you've had to see before. Ooh, I like that very much.
Look, you can try and compare symbols all you want, but I know that there is someone in this town right now who can help us. Now, we can jump off of this ship and go find them, or we can keep reading our books.
Jonnet throws the book in his hand behind his shoulder. Let's go!
Orimar, I think in a match shot to the throne and court knife earlier, catches the book.
This is fine because we are not in a kitchen. We are in a doctor's office.
Yeah. On
a
hygienic practices don't matter here at all.
We cut back to in the past to Travis hanging out in Dref's office, just like juggling things as Dref is trying to work.
Do you have any lighter fluid for these knives?
Put that down! Put it all down! Hey heroes, it's James, your game master, and welcome to the mid-roll.
I am so sorry that this week's episode came out a week late. I'm holding part of the reason for that in my arms right now. But we did have an audio glitch, which, as you can hear from this audio, was smoothed out just fine. A huge thank you to Casey and Tracy and Joe for getting all that sorted out. And a huge thank you to all of you for being patient with me while I am just working under a new boss right now. Because I am working for my new boss, I have a very short time where I can do this mid-roll. So I just want to say thank you to all of our backers on Patreon. Last week, we put out the 7th part of our Jolly Jack adventure, Skyjack's Azure Blues. So that full series is up for your listening pleasure right now. Just head to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast. Just head to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and back us at the $5 level or more. As a quick note, our backer name thank yous are finally going to return next week. Also, this mid-roll is going to become a generic mid-roll that I will have pre-recorded in advance for as long as my paternity leave allows for me to do. But I will have the new backer names in those mid-rolls for you, courtesy of probably Tracy, maybe Casey. Anyway, a huge thank you to our Patreon backers because you help make this show and also help me make my new boss, which I appreciate very much.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Now then, with all of that out of the way, let's get back in the sky. Let's return to our narrative here. And Travis had just suggested that he knows someone who is like a spiritual medicine practitioner who lives in this place. And I kind of want to establish what this place is like. Mm. Y'all are on the outskirts of Dumignon. There are lots of different places for there to be skyports. What little hold the Red Feathers have on this area is very simple and rudimentary cargo transport ships that run a simple route around the various places here. There are definitely still swamp barges, like those airboats that we talked about in our setting building, where lines have been run over the swamp between locations within this area, where they just sort of like jet and pull like cargo across. But of course, the Red Feathers, having access to skyships, can move a lot more cargo a lot more freely. So skyports have been built up to accommodate these cargo vessels that where literally stuff from one place in Dumignon is loaded up and then floated over to another place. If there is a place where they're making textiles, you know, they move the textiles there. If there's a place where they are harvesting like crawdads or whatnot, those can be moved to another part of the port in Dumignon. And of course, like there are Red Feather ships and privateer ships that can land here as well to bring cargo from outside or load up anything from Dumignon for trade. And this, of course, is where the corsairs start to enter the picture. There are so many different ports that are not quite under Red Feather control in that Red Feathers are essentially like operating things the size of moving trucks here. It's not clear which business will want or need to move cargo and on which schedule. And while there are central processing centers, because this area is so swampy, it's simply much easier for everybody to have, like, different sized skyports that they can accommodate. So sometimes, if you are a corsair, and if you know the businesses well enough around Dumignon, you can offer a bit of a bribe to sit in a skyport, and nobody will look one way or the other because things need to move around, and the red feathers are only so important as they are useful here. So I kind of want to know, where has the Uhuru pulled in, and what sort of relationship does Orimar have with the person who controls this port?
This port is, like, tactically this is a bad idea, but I want to introduce this idea into the narrative early, so we're doing it. This port is the kind of, like, town crater that has the most tourist attractions on. It seems that, you know, there are other tour ships with there's a specific, like, tourist company that you brought up before, and unfortunately the name of it doesn't come to mind. I apologize.
I don't think we named it, so now we can name it now.
Oh, wait,
the Osei Company.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you.
Okay, yeah. Oh, then this is hilarious. Because if you are pulled in near an Osei ship, which I think... ship Isola is currently ported here, which is the reason that the Uhuru really isn't registering, because Isola is a floating city, essentially. It looks like a massive beehive, almost, with a very strange featherweave canopy, like a beehive or a pine cone that has, like, this bubbling canopy above it, but, like, windows and decks aplenty looking out in all directions. It can accommodate well over 1,000 people, and it is complemented by its own small fleet of ships, one of which is a flying aviary, where griffins of all types are loaded up and at the ready with mounted riders to defend the ship from raiders at any point, meaning Isola is like a playground for the wealthy and not wealthy alike. I described it as a Disney cruise liner, and I very much meant it. It's a ship that, like, has affordable prices for people, and a ship that has lavish accommodations. But it is, like, the most, like, notorious luxury ship in the world, a place that almost everyone who has heard of it dreams of seeing one day. And it looms large over this area of the city, to the point where there's so much excitement and activity focused on that, an extra skyship, even one as large as the Uhuru, doesn't really make a difference pulling into port.
Yeah, just... parking up next to the largest retirees cruise liner you have ever seen. and I adore the image of various people kind of, like, sipping expensive coffee and maybe sun lounging on the kind of port area below, near the Isola, and just a shadow kind of covering their view as our ship, nowhere near as elegant looking, you know, with our broken masthead and all that. No, zero aesthetics. No drip.
Yeah. The Uhuru, normally a pretty good looking ship, is in bad shape right now.
Yeah.
Dripless arrives, blocking their view of the kind of, like, picturesque, or at least as they were sold, picturesque marshes. And Orimar knows... I think somebody who would be the equivalent of, like, a travel agent, travel attendant kind of person. And there's a lot of kind of, like, fiddling of the books in terms of, you know, when Orimar has visited previously, who they've visited at or what their boat is supposed to be, to get that level of, not visual camouflage, the boat obviously looks like what it is, but at least on paper, it's kind of like, you know, Crawdad Trading Incorporated. These tourists go through so much shrimp somebody needs to be delivering this to the location.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, it is this combination business where they fish crawdads, but also try to make that a tour thing. Maybe it's I do know that, like, out in Massachusetts, sometimes, like, we would go, a fun activity to do is, like, go on a charter boat where, you know, people fish and they, like, take you out for their workday fishing. Mm. And so, you know, obviously they're doing less fishing than they normally would and whatnot. But it is, like, one of those vacation experiences that is essentially doing someone else's job badly for, like, 4 hours or whatever. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it is a real crawdad fishing experience that this person offers.
Mm. I think to add on to that, there's probably in one previous side story chapter in young Oromar's life, there was a long con that required him to kind of, you know, go to Dumignon and as a cover had to run this tour and essentially roped a bunch of very posh tourists into doing some piracy under the guise of actually going on like a, a very slapstick, very sitcom-y kind of like energy to this misadventure
love
in the past.
That,
I love it. I mean, I think the person who then runs this tour company, you know, this is a, you know, native Dumignon citizen who has, like, lived in the swamp their whole life. I think, you know, we were drawing on a lot of different inspirations for this area, but, like, I kind of picture Dumignon as a combination of, like, New Orleans and Quebec, where it's French, like, inspired. France is in the mix, but it's all, like, slightly to the left, slightly to the right of France. Mm. There's no actual, there's just the French, like a sting on everything.
Sting.
Yeah, I think, you know, like, a particular musical quality that can only be described as French, but what you're clearly looking at is not at all European. And I think, like, most of the people here are mixed race. Like, I think sends the wrong indication because, like, this place has been so long established that, like, describing people as mixed, like, they're clearly their own thing now.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got people who have, like, darker skin, and certainly it looks even darker because they tan, because when the sun is out here, the sun is absolutely out. And I think, like, the hairstyles here shift very quickly, and I think this is probably, like, a hair decoration focused area because, like, you are working so hard and out in the sun, you gotta be covering your head.
Mm-hmm.
So there are, like, between, like, nets and veils and hats and whatnot, like, this is a town that is into that. So the person that we meet is somebody who's got, like, a straw hat, but it is a straw hat that I think is painted.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to say there are a lot of flowers and whatnot in this area that give you good dyes and pigments for painting. So it's this beautiful painted hat that, like, looks extremely fine atop this, like, very touristy looking almost costume. You know, they're trying to give you an experience, and that experience is the romantic crawdad fisher person.
Mm-hmm. There are so many scare quotes around authentic in the kind of authentic experience that they're offering. Yeah.
Well, I picture it like the idea of the fortune cookie being, like, a wholly American invention in that there's so much of a tourist influence on this area that they have invented a new kind of romantic authenticity in order to try and lure in people to, like, interact with their trade.
Mm.
And it's working for them. They are performing the job of crawdad fisher person. But, like, as the ship comes in, like, your friend is at the bottom of the gangplank. Oromar Vale, welcome once again to Dumignon.
he signs back, Genevieve, delightful to see you.
And, like, the person gives a mock bow. To receive the King of Pirates is my pleasure.
He waves a hand away at, like, pirates. Like, it's interesting when the hand wave comes in, like, the King of he takes gladly. but at pirates, he's like, oh, no, 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 no. We're here for the authentic experience of Dominion.
Yes, I see on my manifest you've called yourself the Dripless.
Or yes. Okay.
Yes.
I love how that is a term that actually makes sense in Sphere. It's fine. It does now. Please, please, fan artist, please draw Orimar with incredible amounts of drip. It's important. Yeah, it's like, indeed, we wanted to go for something original this time. It might be a while before we are offering tours, but for now, can our ship sit with yours? It is in need of some repair.
Well, should you have the gold to carry you, I'm sure that my port will welcome you.
Orimar tries to laugh, and there is no fluid in his stomach to be able to process that right now. So all you get is a dry weave and a couple shards of apple.
Orimar is going to be spewing apple. This whole adventure.
I am so nervous about whatever this apple incubation is that Nathan is working on, and I can't wait to see it.
Honestly, it's gonna save the day.
I must say, there was to be like an intervening, like, okay, to hit the rewind.
We can work it in. We'll
work it in. We can flashback if it needs to happen. But there's an obvious reason which Orimar would explain if you asked him about it. But is like, yeah, no, we indeed have the coin. Who do you think we are?
I have heard about your exploits recently through a grapevine or two. So I definitely believe that you have the coin not only to port with me, but to pay for the previous times you have chosen to port with me as well.
Rude.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Orimar takes that in actually in without breaking stride is kind of like, oh, indeed. I suppose we should be leaving the funds at the arranged time and place that we normally do. Sorry that it's been a while, but, you know, the handover is always a fun time.
I think at Jonnet saying rude, Genevieve winks at Jonnet and says, young sir, you would do well to never forget your friends throughout your life, especially the money they owe you.
Jonnet's like, all right, I like him.
So yeah, Genevieve like welcomes you down the gangplank and like signals to their various like employees and whatnot to, you know, keep tying the Uhuru down and set about the task of repairing the ship. I think we can see Fuentes on the side of the ship. Fuentes and Daisy traditionally would lower the gangplank together, but it is just Fuentes alone now after the last battle. And Fuentes, who despite grieving, must still go about their work, handing over the manifest of the damages to the port workers who are now coming aboard. We can see the stacks of the Uhuru that have been blown out by the explosives. We can see, God, who is our furnaceer again?
Carlos.
We can see Carlos, who is like still cut such an intimidating figure. It feels to me like the shadows are always darker around Carlos.
Yes.
Carlos, who like beckons forward people and starts gesturing about the things that must happen to the furnaces and the rotations they'll need to be kept on in order to repair all of the various stacks and lines. the Uhuru just enters this area of repair, and it is not going to take the entire haul that you got from the Silver Bullet to repair the ship, but it is certainly going to take more than you would like of the treasure that you recovered from that ship. Thankfully, the Uhuru is indeed flush with cash from its most recent adventures. And with the ship kind of running itself, with Nodos remaining behind to stand watch over Gable while they are unconscious, you three are free to pursue as you would like. Campaign Skyjacks is a one-shot network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter over at CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing. In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjacks role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more. You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com. Like Asians Represent. Asians Represent celebrates Asian creators and diversity in the gaming community. Join hosts Agatha Cheng and Daniel Kwan as they discuss gaming, genre, and representation with their guests and occasionally argue with each other about the sound of Agatha's beloved air horn app. Jonet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. He also co-stars and consults on Showtime's Work in Progress. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @LizAnderson_... or on her podcast, Paired. Travis Madigo was played by Johnny O'Mara, who can be found on Twitter at @JohnnyNBriefs or on his podcasts, Bill Buds and Dilettante Ball. Captain Oromar Vale was played by Nathan Blades, who can be found on Twitter at @PhantomArtsENT. You can also find them streaming on twitch.tv/TheNeonCaster. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my other podcast, OneShot. The original music featured in this podcast was written, composed, and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find him on Twitter over at @ArnePArrott. You can find more of his work at atptunes.com. This episode was edited by Casey Tony, who can be found on Twitter at @CaseyPony or on his podcast, NeoScum. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at @FionaPup. The World of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists, and Illimat, produced by Together Studios. This show uses a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system, designed by Sam Stewart and a team of talented professionals who were fired by the private equity firm owning Fantasy Flight Games.
To strangers, you've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the skies.